Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Wake up to a delicious morning with your favorite McDonald's breakfast sandwiches, now just $2, only in the app. Choose from a bacon, egg, and cheese biscuit, sausage McMuffin, or bacon, egg, and cheese McGriddles, just $2, only in the app. That's a deal as irresistible as the sandwiches themselves. Plus, you'll save time by ordering ahead in the app. Offer valid one time per day from July 29th through September 1st at participating McDonald's. Must opt in to rewards.
Broadcasting live from Florida's capital city, this is the Jeff Cameron Show, brought to you by Orange Theory Fitness on Real Talk 93.3. Now, stop what you're doing and listen closely. It's time for the Jeff Cameron Show in 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Welcome, everybody. This would be the Jeff Cameron Show right here on 93.3. Real Talk Radio, War Chant TV, Live Nation's Friday edition. Pre-record today, guys. We're entering that stage of the summer. Things got to get done. Work has to get done. Things got to get finished up before we get buttoned up on a daily basis. And there is no wiggle room. So we did it early this morning. I'll just tell you that. It was a morning record, but Tom's also got to get his eyes fixed, if I'm being honest. Let's just say it. Dude. Tom's got some eye issues. He's getting old, just like I'm old. He's entering old age. You got to go through this. You guys were with me when I got married. You were with me when I had kids. Now my kids are both in high school. Say that out loud. That hurts a little bit. It's kind of crazy. And you've been with me when Maddie and I had to separate. I brought in the great Tom Lang. He's been my boy ever since. And now you've watched as T. Lizzie got married. Now you watch as his eyesight leaves him. You watch as he becomes an old curmudgeon right here on the air. It's going to happen.
I could be like you. I could be an open book. The amount of doctors I've seen in the last month is absurd. It's something fit for a person getting a checkup in their 60s. But yeah, eye doctor is among the list. I'm going to get my glasses back. You know, I haven't worn the glasses in some time.
Yeah.
But I'm going to get a pair back. That'll be nice. But buddy, I've seen a cardiologist. I've seen a neurologist. This vertigo thing is a little much. It's a little much. And it tells, if you look up the kind that I have, they tell you it's a month to 3 months. It's a long effing time because we're at a month and a half right now.
Yeah.
Month and a half.
It's getting better slowly, right?
It is. It is.
Well, listen, I bring it to people's attention just so they know. I mean, like, that is the one thing about this job, and it's the greatest job in the world, and we both love it, and we wouldn't do it otherwise, and it's just, it's exciting every day to come into work. But if you, unlike any other position pretty much, if you have a medical malady or kids get sick, your wife has to stay home from work for some reason. You know, like, there's no wiggle room here. You've got to manipulate your schedule, and it becomes difficult. Like, you can't just be like, I'm going to go hide in my cubicle.
I'm very thankful for this gig for that reason, because when I was living in Tallahassee at my home, the one that we sold, I would drive on I-10 every day to get to the studios.
Yeah.
For the last month, I wouldn't feel comfortable making that drive as the driver. I wouldn't feel comfortable executing that drive. That's how, you know, intrusive what's going on is. So I am very thankful for the remote capability of the gig. Yeah.
Yeah. Brutal. Just brutal. All right. So that's kind of out of the way, just so people know. That's, we had some hoops to jump through and it's all good. And I'm only kind of kidding around, teasing Tom Lang here, but he has had vertigo and that has been tough and he's getting his eyes checked and all those things. And so there are appointments to be had. Hey, listen, by the way, I don't know. And we'll get into some Florida State stuff here in a second. I'm really pumped about this. Did you watch last night, Tom, at all? I don't know what your evening looked like. But did you see the Cardinals Giants game? First of all, 6-5 was a good game. But did you see the game at Rickwood Field?
I saw social media highlights. I checked in a couple of times before bed was over, but I saw Reggie Jackson's interview before the game started,
which was incredible,
which I think is probably the most important part of anything that I know it's the most important part of what I saw. I can't imagine much would be more important than that particular interview and how blunt and in your face a window into the recent past was.
It was awesome. I was stunned. I think they were on the dais, were stunned, on the desk were stunned, but it was fantastic.
Kevin Burkhardt didn't know how to get out. He was like, well, thank you for the great insight. He's like, hey man. Yeah. He goes, and he said, Reggie Jackson preaching the truth here. I'm like, oh, Kevin, God bless him.
Yeah. But yeah. The thing is, I actually felt for him because I think he's a wonderful announcer.
He is.
Yeah. I think he's probably amongst the best we have.
Trained by SNY. He was on the Mets broadcast.
He's fantastic. There is no easy way to segue there.
Correct.
And I felt for him. I was like, man, this is all at once historically incredible and awesome to watch and to take in and to hear the things that he had to say. You know, right from the jump when Reggie Jackson said, it's not easy to come back here. You know, that you knew instantly, oh, this is going to be different. He's not just giving the platitudes. He's coming in with the, oh, let me tell you, it's not easy to be back here. And I didn't think I'd come back here. And then he talked about his horrific experiences, obviously, of not, we all know the history. We know the history. It's great to hear it from somebody who lived it, and to talk about what it was like not to be allowed to eat in diners and not to be allowed to sleep in hotels and all of those things and to be threatened. And then to have, you know, good people in the world that existed at that time, too, including his teammates and coaches who were Raleigh Fingers, for example. We all know Raleigh Fingers. That was awesome when he was like, well, Raleigh would let me stay with him and we would leave these places and he'd take us places. And John McNamara and those kinds of guys. It was great. But what I loved was that, A, we got that. B, that stadium, the presentation was fantastic. You can go so wrong so quickly when you try to do these historically relevant peek back in time moments. It can get cheesy. It can get preachy. It can get a lot of things. And sometimes the broadcast suffers. And I thought they nailed it across the board. And kudos to Fox for that. They nailed it across the board. Never thought I'd see that. But you're right. The transition, that's a tough one for your driver. Okay. Well, tonight's starters, everybody.
So Poppy, what do the Cardinals need to do to win tonight?
It's so hard. I was like, man, because I'm a driver. That's what I do, right? And I remember thinking as I watched that, I was like, where would I go?
Well, I'm not going to say he's preaching the truth like right after he's done it. Like, hey, man, you tell me he's giving you a sermon? What are you, Sermon on the Mount, Kevin? Like, come on, man. Like,
No. Appreciate the insights. Thanks for the honesty. All of those things.
Thank you. We're floored. We'll be right back after this.
Yeah. But it's tough, though. It is tough. He had to have been like, oh, man. And there's people in his ear, and he's trying to think of where to go, and they got to go to commercial, and there's no nice way to go to a commercial after that. Meanwhile, you've got A-Rod and Reggie hugging on the desk. It's emotional. You're like, tonight's starters, when we come back, should be a good one between the Giants and the Cardinals at famed Rickwood Stadium. Yeah, you're like, oh, Jesus.
At least it's you know, the Fox Sports wing, which, again, he's a great anchor for the Fox Sports
wing. He's incredible. He's awesome. Their coverage of baseball is great.
But, you know, if it was a different part of their wing, they'd be like, you got to get the My Pillow read in.
Oh, that'd be fantastic. That would be fantastic. Yeah, that would be tough. So I thought that was tremendous last night. I hope people got to see it. And it was a great production. I never knew, this is an aside, and I don't know how anybody would know this. It's not something you would necessarily look up, I don't suppose. But it surprised me when I found out part of what they did there was they put together, because of obviously this was in honor of the Negro Leagues and Willie Mays. What I was amazed by was that was the first ever all black umpiring crew.
I suppose that makes sense. Run through the crews in your mind over your decades of watching the game. I mean, I've 30 years of watching baseball. I know the crews. That actually kind of tracks, if you think
about it. Well, I didn't realize. I went and looked it up because I was stunned by that. And I thought, in my mind, I was like, well, there are plenty of African-American umpires.
Yeah.
I see black umpires everywhere. And so I was kind of like, all right, well, like a lot of times that kind of stuff stands out where you're like, huh, no women here, huh? Or, ah, no, so-and-so here. You, like, you see these things. I'm talking about in walks of life when you're at certain places. You could go into a business or something like that or you know, a school or something. And you can kind of, when there's a lack of diversity, and I'm not even saying this from a political standpoint. This isn't an argument. This isn't liberal or conservative. Like, my brain, the way it works sometimes, if I'm at a place, let's say it's all black or all white or all Asian or all men, like, I recognize pretty quickly, like, there's not a whole lot of different here. There's just everybody's the same here. You know, like, that's the way my brain works. I notice that. I don't make assumptions about what that means necessarily. It's a case-by-case thing. Yep. But I do notice it. And so when they said that, I was kind of like, huh, it's never occurred to me that there's a dearth of black umpires. Because I've always noticed that there were plenty of black umpires. Well, I looked it up. That was my point, Tom. And I want you to make your point back. I know you want to say something, but I typed it out here. 11, there have only been 11 black umpires that have been full-time Major League Baseball umpires.
Hmm.
11 black people have been full-time Major League Baseball umpires.
I can name three off the top of my head. Yeah.
But that's just, I was like, wow. I did not realize that. Just you learn something new all the time. I had no idea.
Yes, innocent moments in childhood in surroundings. My wife has a great story. I'm volunteering this for her, but it's true. So she grew up in Pensacola. Family's from Minnesota, but military. You know, mother's in the military, and so the military community is extremely diverse. And you learn so many cool things about different cultures when you're in the United States military. At any rate, she grew up in a completely mixed environment, neighborhood, on the base, all those things. So that is her reality. Her mom takes her home to Minnesota to go see the family when she's 6 years old at the Mall of America.
Bet she wasn't seeing a lot of black people there.
And she asked her mother, where is everybody in the food court? She goes, where is everybody? And at the top of her lungs, because she's an innocent six-year-old.
Yeah, she doesn't know. She's like, what's
and her mother's
here?
Like, oh, my God.
That's pretty funny. By the way, Minneapolis is an awesome city. I don't know if you've yeah, you've been.
It is. Yeah. In the summer.
Yeah. It's a great city. So St. Paul. I love St. Paul. When you go over the river there, you got the water coming down. That's a wonderful area. Would never live there. But it's a wonderful area to plop in and visit and ride the hell out, because 9 months out of the year is brutal. Bruce Feldman released his of The Athletic, previously of Fox, previously of CNN, previously of Sports Illustrated, previously. Yeah, Feldman's been about everywhere. As any of us in this business that covers sports, like, you're jumping around, man, because this is how it works a lot of times. But I respect Feldman. I think he does a good job. I think he's thorough. I don't always agree with Feldman. Nobody always agrees with me either, but that's fine. I respect his work. He has Florida State in the playoff. He projected his top 12 in The Athletic. I think it was yesterday. And he had Florida State in at 10-2. So that stood out to me, Tom, because 10-2 is a and you and I were talking off the air, and you're right, is a non-conference champion. Now, that's not an assumption about what everybody else will do, but what it means is if you're in a playoff and you only have 10 wins, it means you didn't win the ACC championship game. Otherwise, you would have 11 wins. You'd be 11-2.
Yeah, well, unless you're 10-3. Yeah, but you're exactly right. Yeah.
So it kind of implies, anyhow, that they would not be a conference champion. I don't have a problem with that per se. Some people think Clemson's going to win it. The odds makers have that as even the same way with Florida State and Miami. Those three teams tied atop, according to the odds makers, to win the ACC. It's jumbled at the top in an interesting league this year. I'm challenging myself to try to objectively look at the league. It's harder to do when you want out. It's hard to, you know what I mean? It's like hard to give a fair assessment of a thing you don't like, or a fair assessment, or to give fair and balanced coverage of a league that you now disdain. You know, it's like, how am I supposed to look at this objectively? But objectively, I think the league, again, not by way of comparison to the SEC per se this year, but within this league, the competition will be intense this year, because I think SMU is good. Mm-hmm. And I think, obviously, Clemson is good, and Florida State is good, and Miami is good. It takes one more team to join the party. And all of a sudden, you got five good teams fighting for that top spot. That's it. That's pretty deep.
It is. I would argue something on the other side. Like, do you believe Virginia Tech or Louisville could be a team that enters that conversation? You know, that would be my first question. But no matter what your answer is, now that the ACC has added these three teams, and you have Cal and Stanford added to Duke, and this is Duke without Elko, and Syracuse and Boston College, and Lord knows what Wake is going to be this year, North Carolina without their quarterback. Maybe NC State could be a good team. You have watered down the schedules in such a way that many teams in the ACC have what I perceive to be at least a cakewalk. We went through SMU's schedule yesterday. We know what Miami's conference schedule is. Their three hardest games are hosting us. I believe Rhodey's with Virginia Tech and Louisville. That's it. So it is perilous, as at least as a Florida State fan, because you must play Miami and Clemson every year compared to these other schools, which if they peak at the right time, like an SMU, you've got enough veteran presence. You have a quarterback that you like. And if you've got an easier ACC slate where you avoid the landmines of Clemson, Florida State, Miami to the tune of you play one of them instead of two, or, you know, some years, some schools do get screwed and play all three. You really can't slip up too often in the conference, or else you're just going to be on the outside looking in. There are no divisions. And that team might be 7-1 in conference and they play a soft ass ACC schedule, but they're 7-1 and you're 6-2.
Well, that was the worry about Louisville last year.
Yeah.
You know, that was the real concern about Louisville's schedule last year. We were like, what a joke. Mm-hmm. We thought they could legitimately go undefeated or come something close to it.
They did come close to it. Yes. Yeah.
Then they took that ass beating.
Well, the defense. Although you could have given them 12 quarters, and I don't know, they would have scored 17 points.
Well, that's my point. Yeah, they weren't going to move the ball. Once they faced a real defense, they were like, ooh, we're up against it. And we can't block these guys. We can't block Braden Fisk. We can't block Jared Verse. This isn't going to get better over the course of the game. There's only so many people we can put out there on these guys, and we cannot block them. I want to point out that, and I'm glad that it's this way, I suppose, one less. I mean, we don't play them this year, but one less landmine. Had we gotten the Stanford that existed for David Shaw for a very, very long time, I do want to point out post-Jim Harbaugh that David Shaw, for all of the complaints that people have about David Shaw, his conservative style, they had to play a certain way. That way was physically taxing on the teams that they played. And as a refresher course for people, in David Shaw's career at Stanford, they went 11-2, 12-2, 11-3, 12-2, 10-3, 9-5, 9-4. It is not until you get to 2019 that you begin to see the problems reveal themselves. They had the COVID year. I don't count that one. They actually had a winning season during the COVID year. But they went 4-8, and then they skipped the COVID year, 3-9, 3-9, and he walked away. He's like, gig is up. It's not going to work. Things have fallen to pieces. I can't rebuild this. This is the problem you have when you go to Stanford, by the way. If you have the train rolling and you get the right kind of kids and you play a certain way, you can be a problem. You can go to the Rose Bowl, and they did. And you can ride the elite athleticism of a Christian McCaffrey, and you can do these kinds of things, right? But if it goes south, the ability to turn the corner and get it flipped is infinitely more difficult at a place like Stanford than it is almost anywhere else, right? Because you can't get kids into school. You can't willy-nilly say, we're going to take this JUCO kid and he'll turn our fortunes around. Nope, you ain't doing that. Not at Stanford. So once it's off the track, you got to do what David Shaw did, take an assistant coaching job somewhere else. Once it's off the track, you're in trouble. But man, imagine if we would have had to have played that team in the upcoming years if they were that team, the one that ran double tights, big personnel on every play. Here's a little 32 veer for that ass, followed by here's a little 32 veer for that ass, followed by here's a little 32 veer for that ass, followed by here's a play action pass, followed by here's a little 32 veer for that ass on first down. I mean, that would have been like, that was tough.
Yeah, that is akin to having to play the triple option in a given week because it's so foreign. I do think, however, that SMU is that type of team this year in the ACC, just because of how veteran their offensive core is, and they have a really good offensive mind and head coach. And again, we looked at the schedule yesterday where they don't play any conference. Their first four games are out of conference. That is bizarre. You usually see some interplay, some mixing. They don't kick off their ACC slate until they play us, and they have a week zero kickoff. So they'll be preparing for us for weeks and weeks and weeks. That game will have all the fireworks and all literally whatever visual effects they can muster and spring for. It's going to have everybody coming back. I'm sure, you know, Eric Dickerson will be back, and what's his name? Craig James will be back.
Yeah.
Everybody will be back for that particular game. That schedule the rest of the way for SMU is a little bit light. So I feel like that might be the program that matches what Stanford was to the Pac-12, which is annoying. All of these schools like Clemson and us and Miami's got hopes. They're going to say, what the hell? We got to overcome SMU. They don't play anybody. You could just feel that conversation coming.
Yeah, well, coach team got their quarterback back, got their receiver back, their stud receiver, got their running back back, they got that offensive line. We'll have to see. I mean, they were great in that conference a year ago. I believe they had an undefeated conference record. But it wasn't the same competition. So that's kind of what makes it difficult, right? You know, it's interesting. So we'll see. I do think I think that's probably the game, believe it or not. Not Ireland, not Notre Dame, that I'm most looking forward to travel to. Really? I really want to get that sense.
You want to go out there? It's going to be, I'm sure it's a night kick, but it's going to be hot as hell out there.
Oh, I don't care. I mean, look, it's hot. We live in Florida. It's hot all the time. I don't care. It's a new place. I've been to Ireland multiple times. This will be the third. I've been to Notre Dame multiple times. This will be the fourth. For somebody like, and this sounds, I don't mean this like arrogantly or anything like that. I've been very fortunate. I mean, this is the job I'm in, right? But I've been to those places multiple times. I've never been to an SMU game ever. And I've been to Dallas Fort Worth, but I've never been to that stadium. I've never been on that campus. You know how I love new campuses, and I've never, experienced a game there. And I love when we're somebody's biggest ticket. It can be stressful for us, but it was awesome when we went to Boston College for the first time ever, and they were so excited to see us. Now, that proved to not be a great place, not be an awesome atmosphere, not be an awesome stadium, not be a great tradition. I love their campus. It's a great university. They should have no football tradition to speak of, but we learned that firsthand as we were walking around, right? You're like, oh, okay. This is how y'all get down with the football.
A train station, a Dunkin', and a parking lot, and their stadium.
Yeah. Right, right. Mm-hmm. There was nothing. They disallowed tailgating. I mean, there were a lot of things that you're kind of like, okay, well, this ain't it. But now I know because I've been here. I like stuff like that. I love going to Oklahoma. I love going to, well, hell, when we got to go up to Baton Rouge to LSU. And anytime you get to go places like that, I know you enjoyed going to a game between Texas and Notre Dame in Austin. And mm-hmm. I love stuff like that. Now, SMU does not have that kind of cachet that some of these other schools do.
Yeah.
But to me, I can check new things off the list like that. I get excited about it. And they will be pumped. For whatever that atmosphere is, it's going to be the best version of it.
100% it will be. And fans of that university are going to be in disbelief, you know, especially the younger ones who don't remember the Pony Express. They're going to be in disbelief about what that is. Because that'll be their Oklahoma 2011 game for us. Mm-hmm. Florida State has hosted a ton of large games before Oklahoma, but it had been a minute. And anybody, you go back to games in the 80s, that Oklahoma 2011 game is on a different level. It's on the short list of experiences pregame and then crowd within the game. And that's what we're going to bring to SMU in late September.
Yeah, top five. That was a top five game at Doak for me. In terms of atmosphere, yep. You're right. I mean, I've been to some special ones. I mean, amazing ones. The old Saturday nights at Doak are hard to beat. And, you know, whether it was Miami or Florida rolling into town where you had some intense moments that were all-time great. Oklahoma that year was right up there with the best of them. And it was as loud as you can remember it being at Doak Campbell Stadium, especially after the Rashad Greene play, which is one of the luckiest, amazing plays ever.
That's a wing and a prayer. Absolutely. Literally a wing and a prayer. That thing, what was the exit velocity on that throw? Like 12?
It wasn't much. It wasn't much. Jeff Cameron Show 93.3 Real Talk Radio, War Chant TV.
The Jeff Cameron Show is a production of the WarChant.com Multimedia Network. Check out WarChant.com today for the latest news inside Florida State Athletics. That's WarChant.com. Now, back to Jeff on Real Talk 93.3.
So back to the conversation that we kind of meandered and talked around. Florida State, playoff, Feldman. It all kind of marries with something else that came out this past week, really last week, and I've been meaning to get to it. And again, you don't have to care anything about gambling to still be interested in this subject. But the betting lines, and I won't get into all of them, but you can find, according to Circa, and now that I've been to Circa, Tom, I cannot champion Circa enough. It is unreal. I can't
think really of really. I said Circa.
Oh yeah. It's unreal. Tom, if you get a chance to go out to Circa, you just, I think I sent you the picture, right? I posted it. It's that it goes on. So when you walk in, first of all, it's several floors, but when you walk in, the way it's laid out is incredible. But if you go to their bar from one side of the room to the other is the bar. So I'm talking about hundreds and hundreds of seats to belly up to. That's just the bar. They've got the casino over here. Like, everybody's gambling over here. You're doing your, you know, your poker tables, your blackjack tables. You're doing all your things. But if you just want to walk up and sit down and watch a gazillion televisions of sports being played simultaneously all around the world, pick your spot on the never-ending bar. It is unreal. Like, there's always a spot open. You know, I mean, I suppose that wouldn't be true if it were the NCAA tournament or perhaps the Masters or something like that. There might be a weekend where you would walk in and go, ooh, going to be tough to get a seat today. But it's seat after seat after seat after seat after seat. It's also where VEASAN broadcasts from, and they have them in a glass, like a glass case. It's a studio with, you know, you can watch them doing their show while you're sitting, eating, drinking, gambling, and watching the games. It is unreal. Then they have the giant three-tiered pit that goes down with this huge wall in the center, and that's their traditional sports book that you're able to just look around like you would any other sports book, MGM, whatever it is, right? It felt like heaven. It felt like heaven. It is something to behold. So if you get a chance to go to Vegas, if we get a chance to go to Vegas together, Tom, we're hitting Circa right off the bat. You'd be blown away. Now, having said that, they've really sunk a ton of money into kind of trying to emerge as the college sports book. I mean, pro sports book. It's unreal. McMurphy tweeted out the board, according to Circa, with some of the games that came out, and he had a list of the bigger games of the year. Florida State is, of course, on this list, and I wanted to take a look at one of them. But if you're curious, and I think you've already taken a peek, so I'll just reveal it to the audience. Florida State is a 2-point favorite against Miami on the road. And I think we knew that, right? Isn't that one of the ones that had come out?
Yeah, a different service had put out. I think it was 1 or 1.5. So that does track, yes.
Florida State is an 11-point favorite over the University of Florida. How about that, huh?
That makes a lot of sense for two reasons beyond the location of the game. One of those reasons is familiarity with the offense. You would have a quarterback who, I mean, by that point, we are very familiar with the offense. Florida State's had 3 bye weeks. You have a ramp-up game for Florida. It's a nice spot for FSU. And then the other part of it is it's a horrible spot for Florida because of the sequence of games they play.
Oh, the 5 and down the stretch, yeah.
You could say the 5 down the stretch, the 11 that they start with, however you want to put it. That schedule's ridiculous. Beleaguered bunch at Florida. I think that's got to be worth at least a couple of points in factoring what the number would look like, is that they are beaten down and perhaps they're done. You know,
mentally. Well, I'm going to say this. If I'm a Florida fan, and this reminds me of Florida State in the lost decade, when you get a glimpse of these odds that come out for college football's games of the year, if you will, you know, so you're a Florida fan. You sit down, you say, oh, I wonder, you know, okay, what's the spread against Florida State, or one of our arch rivals? What is that? Oh, we're 11-point underdogs. Okay. Double-digit underdogs to our rival. Okay. Let that sink in for a second. It'll hurt your feelings just a little bit, but, you know, you kind of understand it. Like you said, next big rivalry, many Florida fans would say a even bigger rivalry. What are our odds against Georgia? Let's take a gander. Oh, Georgia's 19-point favorites over Florida. Okay, another double-digit affair there. I don't know. We're hosting LSU if I'm a Florida fan. We usually play LSU quite well. Let me take a look at what our odds are against LSU. Oh, LSU's favorite on the road, -6, breaking in a new quarterback. Okay, all right, that's a toughie. Let's take a look at, you know, we play Texas this year on the road. First time playing Texas on the road. This will be interesting. What are the odds that we hang in there against Texas? Well, according to Vegas, not good. -18. So we're 19-point underdogs if you're Florida against Georgia. You're 18-point underdogs if you're Florida against Texas. You're an 11-point underdog if you're Florida against Florida State. I mean, sweet Jesus. Are we even favored against UCF? Let me check. Oh, they are. They are. Florida's favored by 6 against UCF. I can keep going, but I find all of that fascinating. That's got to be a tough pill to swallow. Did you happen to check, Tom, Florida State's odds against SMU?
Yes, that was the game that stood out to me the most because I don't believe that had been released earlier. So I was looking for new insights on Florida State's schedule. I believe we knew the Georgia Tech line, the Clemson line, Miami, and Florida. But SMU, I don't believe, was on the docket. And I find this number to be interesting. Put it that way. I'll let you reveal it.
It's 9. Florida State is a 9-point favorite on the road against SMU. I think that is heady praise for a Florida State program going on the road to face a very veteran-laden, and we, as we've pointed out, will be to the over the moon for this game, jacked-up SMU crowd. That's interesting. Florida State is a 9-point favorite there. Florida State is a 4-point favorite at home over Clemson. Did that strike you as odd?
No, not as much. Because I think that it's essentially a point favorite on a neutral field. I'm going with that, or a point and a half on a neutral field. So that makes sense to me. The 9 for SMU is a much higher indicator of confidence in Florida State and what reports are going on behind the scenes among the Sharps than anything else. So I think the Miami line and the SMU line are telling you a story that the Sharps are hearing very good things about what Florida State is going to be, and their power ratings say as much.
I will point out just for fun, just to squeeze it in there because it's always fun to make fun of. Florida is a 9-point underdog to Tennessee. Almost double digits again, Tom. Almost double digits again.
Well, it made sense for the Texas and Georgia part of it because they go from Jacksonville against Georgia to playing Texas in Austin the next week. So that's one of those sequentially difficult moments for Florida. In fact, just as a reminder for everybody who wants a smile on a Friday afternoon in late June, Florida has a bye week on October 26th. That is, in fact, the weekend we play Miami. So Florida takes that break, and we own this, as we already do. We own the state with the spotlight. Then Florida's remaining schedule is as follows. Neutral site against Georgia, in which they're nearly a 3-touchdown underdog with extra points. On the road to Texas, hosting LSU, hosting Ole Miss, and then traveling to see us.
It's a toughie. That's a toughie. Better win that Ole Miss game. that Ole Miss game.
Lane will lay an egg, so maybe that's the one.
Every time I see Ole Miss anywhere in the upper echelon of college football, ranked in the top 10 or anything like that, I'm like, I don't know. Years ago, I introduced the tent of suspicion to the lexicon of many, as we all discuss certain programs that are hard to believe in no matter the hype. And over the years, the greatest culprits or most obvious teams to point to were Wisconsin. Wisconsin, very, very high on that list. Prior to Georgia finally kicking down the door and becoming now the preeminent program in college football, we used to go, John Desai, Georgia. John Desai, you're going to find a way to lose two or three because you always do. And then on the West Coast, it was always for me. I got so tired of people trying to rank UCLA in the top 25 or the top 20. And for a long time, frankly, after Pete Carroll, USC, got tired of watching USC forever be ranked. I was like, come on, man. They're going to do what they do. They're going to lose three or four games because that's who they are. And that has been who they are. That's still that way, by the way. Still that way. It's your boy taking Utah every year to win the Pac.
To this very day, you could say. For Ole Miss, the argument that they would make is they've got two 10-win regular seasons in the last three seasons.
Oh, yeah, they've been good. They've been good. I'm just saying, it's hard to shed. Yeah, those were seasons where nobody expected them to do anything, and they surprised and did do something. The tint of suspicion is reserved for those that have lofty expectations coming into a year that they cannot live up to.
That was 2 years ago, and they went 8-4. So, yeah.
Mm-hmm. That's who they are. Notre Dame is favored over Florida State, and that is the one that I jumped on. I took Florida State and grabbed the three. Florida State is a three-point underdog. I took Florida State, grabbed the 3 points right now. I'm betting it. Give me the Noles on the road. It's funny. I talked to Florida State fans on the regular, and all of them seem to be of the mindset that that's going to be a tough game to win. Am I crazy in thinking that I think we're going to be fine against Notre Dame? I don't feel this concern.
That's a tough one. I think it's all about the offense at that point. How much confidence do you have in the offense? And if you do, and you do, as you've talked about this consistently in the offseason, that you believe at the very least this is going to be a more enjoyable offensive product to watch.
I like the style that I think they're going to employ. I'll say that, yes.
But this potentially is a very interesting low-scoring game because we're going to want to run the football. They're obviously going to want to run the football. And so you might only get, two fewer possessions than you're used to. You might run 20 fewer plays than you're used to. So at that point, it does become kind of nip and tuck. But if you're giving me a field goal in that situation, yeah. I think also weather. It's November. If you play that game in September, I think Noles fans would feel more confident. There's something about the stigma of the cold plus facing Notre Dame. And last time we were there, it was very cold. But the problem was, go ahead and look at that roster from 2018 compared to
this. Yeah, I mean, we didn't stand a chance in that game. We knew it. It was a nightmare scenario for a lot of reasons. It's not like they were going to be coached up, Tom.
No. Well, it would have helped to go through the walkthrough.
Yeah. Perhaps. I mean, I don't know that would have made a huge difference in the final score, but it is something one does when they have an organization that they're running. That was I'll never forget walking into that stadium and dealing with those arrogant fans and having that terse exchange with that woman and then her boyfriend being mortified at her behavior, and then us knowing that this is a game and you were sick as a dog. Oh my Lord.
Yes, I was. Now I did participate in the tailgate. Provision tailgate, because what else are you going to do? I'm on the bus, but I didn't make it much past halftime. I had to go back on the car. I was so done.
Well, that antiquated, dilapidated, freezing cold brick stadium didn't help anybody. And you're walking around the innards, you're like, this is 1837. No. We're going to die out in here. This is awful.
No, it's akin to, unless you're in that newfangled, corporate heated lamps area, which is smart. They're starting to, build that Pick out.
Up. Yeah.
You're in Boston College otherwise. It really is. It reminded me so much of going to Boston College, so that's what I don't get about these hallowed grounds. I'm sure it's a beautiful campus when the weather is nice.
I toured the campus because that's what I do. And it was a great campus.
That's lovely and all, but this football stuff,
yeah,
they've got history. A lot of programs do. I go to West Point, find a bunch of history there too. But when you're in there, it feels like I'm in it's probably Alumni Stadium in Boston College. I feel like I'm at Boston College.
You feel like you're in the Donner Party. You're going to die. It's awful. You're like, this isn't going to get it done. I feel like I'm surrounded by cold, wet brick.
Well, and then yes, that's correct. That damp, and it's a weird color brick too. It's not the right, like oak.
Sucks.
It's hideous. We walked in there from the house the property where they had the tailgate. And you remember, little did we know at the time we'd be referencing it in the future, going by the baseball field.
Oh, yeah.
And it basically looked like a glorified, you know, when you play up at 13 years old, baseball field, when you go to play the big field, quote unquote. Yeah, that's what it looked like.
Well, I remember when we first had a chance to talk about Link Jarrett coming here, and then I was trying to press upon people how impressive it is that he took Notre Dame to the College World Series, because quite frankly, they do not have the facilities to compete with even average programs. It's this very strange dichotomy that you could have Notre Dame be as elite as it is in most things pertaining to college, right? Like that educationally, it's outstanding. Historically, when you look at their athletic programs, they're amongst the best over the years. And yet, well, and I'll add a third to that category. It's one of the wealthiest institutions in America.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, how, with all of that success, the storied history, the massive group of alumni from which to draw, most of whom are accomplished in their professional fields because of the great education that I just spoke of, how do you not have better facilities? Why are we looking at this? You've got more money than any school not named Harvard or Stanford to go and make sure that you have the best of the best. And we're walking around here as if we're going to die of a common cold. This is awful. It's the 1700s. We're just sitting here freezing to death.
It looks like where they quarantined Vito Corleone, you know, when he came to America. That's what it looks like. And I'm sure it was built in the same period of time. And that's what they believe is the allure of it. But I got to tell you, hearing the flutes playing, before, you know, from Rudy and all that stuff, man, none of those alumni live in South Bend. They don't. They'll travel in for one game on their private jet because they're rich as hell from that excellent education. They got no doubts there. No doubts there. Then they go to Florida. Then they go to California.
Oh, sure.
Not in that dump. And maybe Chicago for the summer, but not even the winter. Because
they go to Chicago first and foremost, and then they spread out from there. But yes, it's they're not staying in South Bend. That is fair. I love that we noted that Notre Dame was a 3-point favorite over Florida State and proceeded to spend 8 minutes ripping. That's right. It's what we do on the Jeff Cameron Show, 93.3 Real Talk Radio, War Chant TV. Really quick, another reminder, swing past my friends at Social Kitchen. You can check them out at socialkitchentlh.com. You want chef-prepared meals for next week? Got to get it in. You usually got to get it in by Thursday or Friday. Go check out what your options are. If you're in Tallahassee, swing by on Cary Forest. You walk in there, you'll see that glass case of which I speak and all the glorious meats from which to choose. Social Kitchen, best of the best in terms of options of great food. And if you're a griller like this guy, then you need to go and make sure you get the premium meats from Social Kitchen. All right, so a real short segment here. Tom and I got carried away in our hatred for Notre Dame and proceeded to rattle on a good 10 minutes about the antiquated facilities and what a miracle it is that Link could have won there because he had to share said facilities with the softball team for practice half the time.
Right. That's just remember that, you know, what you can say in line this year at Notre Dame when inevitably you get into a fight with a local is if it's a woman or a man, just pick a name like Colleen or Kevin and just say, "You're lying to yourself, Colleen. You're lying to yourself. It sucks here. You know it sucks here, Colleen."
Really quick, Alabama, 2-point favorite over Oklahoma in Norman. Is that in Norman? Says it's in Norman. Are they playing neutral side? That's in Norman, isn't it?
No, it's a conference game. I couldn't imagine they're playing neutral.
Maybe give me OU there. Clemson, South Carolina. Clemson's a 13-point favorite. Michigan, Ohio State. Ohio State, Tom, is a 10-point favorite over Michigan.
Really?
10? Will there be 10 points scored in the game? Alabama, a robust favorite over Auburn, minus 12. Texas A&M, Texas a 5-point favorite. Virginia Tech, Miami a 7-point favorite. Notre Dame, check that. Penn State, Wisconsin, I know everybody needs to know that. Penn State a 5-point favorite over Wisconsin. Give me Wisconsin. Let's go.
That's the Spider-Man game, by the way.
Oh, yeah.
Point at each other.
By the way, Georgia on the road at Texas. Great effing game. Georgia is a 2-point favorite on the road at Texas.
Ooh, no, 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 no. I don't think so. Interesting.
I do. I think Georgia's better than Texas.
Might be, but at Texas? I don't know. I'm going to look at their schedule while you rattle off a couple other games just to find the context and the circumstance.
Rematch of the national championship, right? Michigan and Washington. Michigan's an 8-point favorite. Florida is a 6-point favorite over UCF. I gave you that one already. Tennessee on the road at Oklahoma. I'm not going to lie, man. These Oklahoma-Texas additions to the SEC, they're awesome. I mean, getting a chance to see Texas play Georgia and Oklahoma play Tennessee and Florida play Texas and on and on and on we go. It's fun. It's fun. And ooh. What's up?
So here's the reason. Here's the reason for Georgia, Texas. Georgia plays Mississippi State the week before. Texas plays Oklahoma the week before.
That's a bad spot.
That's a bad spot to be playing Georgia right after Oklahoma.
Give me Georgia all day. In fact, I'm going to bet it when we go off the air here. I think which is about to be now, short segment. I'm going to run to your app. Run to your app, everybody. Grab Georgia. Texas is in a spot that week. It's a tough one. They're not going to be emotionally ready. And don't forget, unfortunately, Georgia brings their starting quarterback back because, of course, they do. So that you can be equipped to handle road games when you got a veteran quarterback. Hour number two, forthcoming. We'll explore some more football. Chef Cameron Show 93.3 Real Talk Radio and War Chant TV.